Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate Pick Your Own Farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This holiday weekend is typically huge for fall hiking, where many people head to New Hampshire's hills for a last look at the foliage and to get a hike in before the days get much shorter and colder. And so, to celebrate the fall hiking season, we sit down with three Granite Staters who'll likely be out there on the trails, but perhaps choosing hikes where the crowds won't be found, including trails highlighted in a new book called 52 with a View. Today in The Exchange, we explore these other hikes, some easy, some hard, all with a vista worth seeing. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Allison Driscoll, a realtor and mom to an 18-month-old who joins her on her hiking adventures. She shares information and inspiration on her Trail to Summit website. Allison, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us, Brendan Bowen, an avid hiker. He compiles the New Hampshire Family Hikes website, a guide for all levels of ability. And Brendan, thank you very much for your time.
Wonderful to be here.
And also with us, Ken McRae, author of the guidebook that I mentioned, 52 with a View, and administrator of the Facebook group, 52 with a View, which includes lots of pictures and comments about the hike. And Ken, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to let our listeners know that all of our guests' websites are on our website, and that's nhpr.org/exchange. So definitely check out the links for more information about hikes that you might want to take. And Ken, I want to start with you. You self-published this book just this year, a couple months ago. It came out in July, the first run. It's pretty simple, no maps, no pictures, but it has been selling like crazy. You're on your third printing already. You told me before the show you're almost getting ready for a fourth printing. What are you tapping into here?
Yeah, that's correct. The response has been incredibly overwhelming. I mean, I knew there was a demand for this book because a lot of people had been asking, why isn't there a detailed guidebook for the 52 of the View Peaks like there is for the 4Ks?
The 4,000-footers.
4,000-footers, yeah. And I said, yeah, you're right, there isn't a book like that. Why isn't there a book like that? And I've had this idea for several years now to do it. And I've been gathering data on the trails and such. And then I really started putting it together last year. And, you know, I started writing it maybe December 2018. And the demand, I think you could say, the demand has been there. And
so what niche do you think it's filling, Ken? What sort of a hole was it filling that wasn't out there?
Well, this list has become very popular for folks who have already done the 4,000-footers and moving on to something else, and also for beginners who are just starting out. So there's a really wide appeal there, I think. And I think people were just looking for that sort of comprehensive information on these peaks.
You have described this book as a complement to the 4,000-footers, not to put down the 4,000-footers, but for people who maybe don't have the time or the ability or don't live close enough to those 4,000-footers, this is something for them as well.
Yeah, well, the list itself was created as a complement to the 4,000-footers. So 48 plus 52 to make a nice even 100 peaks.
That's convenient.
Yeah. But these, you know, these peaks are all over, spread all over the state. Some of them are actually more difficult than some of the 4,000-footers, but a lot of them are easier.
And are these hikes aimed at, in part, Ken, at older hikers, people who might have done the 4,000-footers when they were younger. Now they're into their, you know, 70s or 80s. They still want to hike, but they can't quite make it up Lincoln Lafayette.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen people on, it's like Mount Willard, for example, is probably one of the easiest 52 of the View Peaks. I've seen, you know, 5-year-old kids doing it. I've seen 75-year-old people doing it. So it really just spans the gamut of age groups.
What do you think, Allison? What's your take on the need for a more diverse look at hiking in New Hampshire?
It's a really interesting question. So I've done the 4,000 footers in each season. So I've completed them.
Wow, you're serious.
Four plus times. So I became a little obsessive. And I was working on the 100 highest list, which is the 100 highest peaks in New England. So it's New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, 4,000 footers, plus a lot of bushwhacks. And when I was working on those, it was before I finished in each season, and I just kept going back to the 4,000 footers. And eventually, I did kind of get my fill for a little bit. I had my son, he's 18 months old, and when I was pregnant with him, I was doing 4,000 footers still. So I hiked 9 when I was pregnant with him. And you know, right now he's really heavy. So carrying him, he's about 25 pounds now. Just getting out to the 4,000 footers, having the time to do a long 10 plus mile hike, it's a lot. So I think a lot of people are looking for hikes that are more attainable, that maybe if you have a half a day to do something. It's also many of these hikes I've done where I will look for something that has a great view that I want to bring a friend to or get someone into hiking that's not too intimidating, and you get a reward at the end. You know, some of the 4,000 footers, you know, I love doing, but you get to the top and there's a bunch of trees, and then you turn around and you go back home. So it's not as rewarding for someone that's never done, you know, a bigger hike in New Hampshire before. And we have a lot of roots and rocks and, you know, it's a lot of tree line that you're competing with to then get to tree line and turn around. So having a comprehensive list of hikes that also aren't, I don't, you know, and Ken might be able to confirm this or not, but I don't think the 52 at the View, some of them are very, very popular. And some of them
they're not those lesser known hikes.
No, and I just did Sugarloaf the other day. I did Middle Sugarloaf, which is on the list, on a Tuesday, and parking was completely full.
Really?
And however,
Shapiro was on here, very
popular. Oh, yeah,
popular
very popular.
As well.
But if you go up north to, you know, McGalloway or, you know, some of the other ones that are more out there, you can go on a Saturday and not see anyone.
Wow.
So it really entices all sorts of people and all sorts of abilities, like Ken was saying.
Well, I'll definitely talk to you a little bit later and everyone else about hiking with kids, especially small kids.
Absolutely.
As you've done. So, but Brendan, I want to get you to jump in here too. What's your philosophy when it comes to finding a hike?
Well, I like to choose the hikes that are going to give me the most reward or that have some unique aspect about them that's going to get me to surmount the effort and just go out there and experience all that they have to offer. And there's a lot of wonderful destinations, like Allison was talking about, on the 52 of the View list that really don't get the attention that they deserve. Like, for example, just last weekend I went out to Mount Tremont. It was pretty much peak foliage. I was driving there. The traffic was insane. I was stuck behind like 3 RVs. even the parking area, the there's a little pull-off at the trailhead for Mount Tremont. There was quite a few cars there. But on the hike, I might have seen 5 people.
Wow.
And Tremont is, I would consider it to be one of the top foliage hikes in New Hampshire. It was absolutely stunning. And yeah, like I said, it's just one of the many, many places that really needs to get more attention.
Well, and when we've talked about the 4,000 footers on this program before, a lot of people have said it's so accessible to see that list of the 4,000 footers and you get the satisfaction, like Allison clearly has, checking it off. But there does seem to be more of a movement now of people saying, you know, there's a lot of other stuff here in New Hampshire besides the 4,000 footers. So that's what's interesting and unique about this book. I want to ask you something, Brendan, you just said, and get everybody else too. You said, I like to choose a hike with a reward. So for me, the reward is the view. But on your website, the Hike Finder on your website, mm-hmm. you've got other kinds of rewards too. So what else is a reward besides a stunning view?
Oh, I mean, if it's a beautiful blue sky day when I'm out there, I'm going to want to see a beautiful view.
Right.
But like you said, there are definitely a lot more diverse kinds of rewards to achieve when you're hiking. And sometimes the reward can just be being out there in the forest in like a beautiful type of forest environment that you never noticed before, or maybe passing a scenic pond, or just following a stream along the trail. It's really a lot about just getting out in nature and taking it all in.
Waterfalls, fire towers.
Oh, yeah. There's
a
lot
to see
walls,
out there. Other things like that that you wouldn't expect. Go ahead, Allison. I'd love your thoughts there, too. What's the reward?
For me, it depends on kind of what mood I'm in, or like you were saying, Brendan, the weather and how it affects your hike. So if I'm, you know, hiking in the winter, it might look different, where you might do a hike that there's no view, and just being alone out there with, you know, only your snowshoe tracks, and, you know, seeing the bird prints on the trail and some rabbit tracks, and you get to the summit and, you know, everything is, it's a winter wonderland kind of a feeling when you're out there, and it's just really peaceful. And that's enough where I personally don't always need a view at the top. We were talking earlier before the show started about, you know, bushwhacking and the reward of getting to the top, finding the little canister, you know, putting your name in there and finding your way back is rewarding, you know, not having to call for search and rescue, using, knowing that your ability to use a map and compass is really efficient, is really rewarding. So that's great. I love night hiking, sunset, sunrise hikes.
Night hiking.
Yeah.
The search and rescue people listening are going, whoa, 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 whoa.
If you do it, you know, if you are prepared, and I'm sure we'll talk about preparation and what we personally do, there's a lot that goes into preparation. So I don't just say, oh, you know, I'm bored tonight, I'm going to go and do a hike and just drive and, you know, pull over at the first trailhead I see. There's a lot of research that goes into it, and just weather and making sure that, you know, if it's a full moon hike that you want to do, it can't be rainy and cloudy. You need to know. Most of the night hikes I do, I've done them many times before during the day. So that's always really important, is to know the trail extremely well and, you know, having all the gear that you need. But, you know, there's no one in the parking lot, so you don't have to deal with the crowds. Even in the summertime, the bugs, you know, are much better. You get not even just the regular view, but, you know, a sunset view it can be phenomenal. Sometimes it can be disappointing, where you can't predict how it's going to look, and you get there and put all the effort in, and, you know, it's pretty dismal, you know, or it's covered up by, you know, too many clouds or something like that. But the night hiking is beautiful. I've done the Bonds, for example. We started in November a few years ago at 11 p.m., and we saw sunrise from Bond Cliff.
Wow, and you hiked all night.
Yeah, and I was going to take a nap beforehand and didn't because I was excited. So, you know, you're up for 2 days and you're exhausted, and, you know, you're on the summit of Bond, you know, behind a cairn, closing your eyes for 20 minutes to get a little rest. But it's totally worth it in the pictures. And, you know, I do a lot of what I call type 2 fun, where it's difficult and it's something that I don't think most people would call fun in the moment. And it's so much fun after the fact.
It makes for a great story.
Exactly,
anyway.
Exactly.
I want to remind everybody that our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the Exchange, we are celebrating the fall hiking season with a look at 52 with a view, other hikes beyond the 4,000 footers that are pretty famous here in New Hampshire. We're looking at hikes for people who might need a less strenuous walk or a shorter walk. Some of the hikes, though, in this book 52 with a view are pretty tough. Lower elevation does not always mean less difficulty. Let us know what some of your favorites are. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us. John posted on Facebook, and by the way, lots of people are posting their favorite hikes and their photos of views, so definitely check out our Facebook page. John also writes, I remember my dad carrying me on his back 50 plus years ago up Mount Kearsarge when I ran out of energy. He says this is pre-backpack, kid backpack days. It was a joy to carry my kids up Kearsarge when they were little. 360-degree views. John, thank you so much. And he's so right, Ken. Kearsarge is sort of the ultimate way to introduce your little kids to hiking. I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, my dad brought me out into the town forest when I was about probably around four. And that was kind of my introduction to hiking.
What town was that?
In Needham, Mass. We lived right next to the town forest. And I go back there today and walk those trails. And this is really a tiny piece of land. But as a kid, it was this vast wilderness for me. And it was fascinating. So I'd love to see little kids out on the trail at an early age. I think it's fantastic. I don't have kids, but I'd love to see other kids out there.
Yeah, and that one hike up Kearsarge where basically you drive almost the way there and you have to hike up maybe half a mile or something. And to the adult, it seems, you know, quick, but to a child, it seems enormous.
Right.
You know?
Even a short hike like that for a kid is amazing.
I love your thoughts too, Allison, given that hiking with little kids is kind of your thing.
Absolutely. So like I said earlier, my son's 18 months. He only started walking a few months ago and he's up to maybe a cumulative, maybe a half a mile. So, you know, he walks a little bit. The routes are pretty difficult. And I found that he really loves to take the most difficult path possible. So it'll be a flatter, wider kind of a swath. And he'll find, you know, a down tree limb and climb on that or try to go up the side where there's some moss and touch that. And, you know, so when you are hiking with kids, it's a lot slower. You get to see a lot more, appreciate more. It does take a lot longer.
It does take a lot longer because they want to explore. They want to look at the little stream or the funny rock or the funny bush.
Lots of snack breaks, which is great. And, you know, just carrying, you know, another person is a lot of work. And it's really fantastic to do that introduction. And right now I've been kind of working on the 52 with the view just here and there, you know, when I have time, if I want to do a half day hike or, you know, as a realtor, I'm all over the state. I actually had a closing a few weeks ago in Bath. And so I went over and did Black Mountain before I went to the walkthrough and the closing. So, you know, this list is great because they're short enough typically that you can, you know, sneak something in if you're in an area where there's going to be one of the 52 with the view. And he loves going with me. And it's great to see his reaction to the view and the summit and just seeing other families out there. And I know that I will start from scratch again with this list when he is able to walk the whole thing. And I think this will be kind of our first adventure together is him doing the list.
Brendan, how did you get started doing this New Hampshire Family Hikes website? Again, this is where you can just put in where you live, what your ability is, how much time you have, and boom, you get like seven or eight options.
Well, I actually started designing my website when I was in high school. I had just taken a computer programming class online, and I learned a bit of web design, and I was trying to pick a topic for creating a website, putting the skills to use, and that was around the time I had gotten into hiking. I had actually taken the New Hampshire State Park Pursuit Challenge with my parents, so that's kind of what I have to thank for getting me into hiking. And actually, it was funny, we mentioned Mount Kearsarge earlier. That was kind of one of the first mountains I climbed.
Yeah.
And I was listening to what Allison was saying, the description of how young children experience hiking, and I was thinking, gee, that's exactly what it was like for me when I was young doing that. But
it seems enormous, and then you go back 10 years later and go, oh, maybe it wasn't that enormous. We'll definitely pick up on your website after a short break, Brendan, because I have another question for you and a bunch of questions for all of you about some of the things you need to think about before you head out, even if it's a small hike. All that's coming up, so stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Advest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, hiking 52 with a view. A new book describes these peaks as a complement to New Hampshire's famous 4,000 footers. Many of these 52 are appropriate for those who need a shorter or less strenuous hike, but some are pretty tough. Our guests say lower elevation doesn't always mean less difficult. Let's definitely hear from you as we celebrate the fall hiking season today in The Exchange. We'd like to hear your questions and comments about what you see out on the trail. And also, if you want to share some of your favorites, we'd love to hear those, too. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Tweet us, comment on Facebook, or call 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Ken McGray, author of the guidebook 52 with a View, administrator of the Facebook group 52 with a View. Also, Allison Driscoll, a realtor and mom to an 18-month-old who does a lot of hiking with her. Allison shares information on her Trail to Summit website. And Brendan Bowen, he's also an avid hiker. He compiles the New Hampshire Family Hikes website. And you can find all of these websites on ours. It's nhpr.org/exchange. And before we go back to our listeners, Brendan, I did want to ask you a little bit more about NH Family Hikes website. Again, I went on it yesterday. It was super easy. I plugged in that I live in the Concord area, that I only had half a day, that my foot kind of hurts, so I can't do a whole big giant hike. Mm-hmm. And I got, you know, 8 or 9 great ideas. So what did you sort of learn along the way of putting this together?
Well, you know, I was talking about when I first started getting into hiking earlier, and when we were doing that, to find information about where we wanted to go, the hikes we wanted to do, we would do a search online, and we were finding that there was really no one place to go that had all of the information you needed. We'd have to, you know, go from site to site and pick out pieces of information. So I was thinking I should design a resource that really puts everything in the hands of the people who are looking for it, so that it's all there together. You have all the information you need. So yeah, that was kind of the reason behind it. And yeah, I've learned a lot along the way. I've gotten it to be more professional. I definitely learned some writing skills. But yeah.
What's been the reaction since you put this up? And when did you put it up, by the way?
It was like 7 years ago. And I've gotten a lot of positive reactions. I've gotten a lot of comments from friends and strangers alike telling me what a good job I've done, how helpful it is for them. I've gotten a lot of people telling me that they use my website, they take it out on the trail with them on their phone or something so they can read along and look at the pictures as they hike. So yeah, I'm happy with what it's done.
You know, a little history since we heard the history of Brendan's website. Ken, the history of 52 with a View, now we could spend a whole half hour talking about but it got started with a group of older folks called, correct me if I'm wrong, the Over the Hill Hiking Club, is that
Over
right?
Over the Hill Hikers.
Okay, Over the Hill Hikers. Yep. All right. So who are they, and how did this come about?
They're just a loose-knit group of folks out of Sandwich, and they sort of got together just in the late 70s. They're a group of retirees, and they just kind of all congregated in Sandwich. They just kind of all met each other there and just started hiking in the area. They kind of settled on Tuesdays of... That was their day of the week to hike. They started working on the 4,000 footers, other lists. They traveled around New England, but basically stayed in New Hampshire for the most part. And then around 1991, Lib Bates stepped into the picture, and she kind of took over the organization. Again, I say organization, but it's a very loose-knit group of folks. There's no real structure to it, as they will tell you themselves. And they had kind of exhausted their hiking options at that time. They were looking for something new. So they created this 52 with a View list, which was 52 peaks to complement the 48 4,000 footers, and each one had some sort of scenic vista or view.
And as we said earlier, some of them were getting on in years, so didn't feel like they had the ability to do the 4,000 footers anymore, but really still wanted to be out there.
Sure.
Some of the folks in this group were in their 80s.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's inspiring.
Yeah.
Let's go to our
list. And they're still at it today.
Yeah. Let's go to our listeners. Tom from Exeter writes, we have two dogs who love to roam and run, but many areas don't allow dogs or dogs must be on a leash. Are there any areas where you'd recommend we could hike with our dogs off leash? And Ken, I know you addressed this in the book, so go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the 52 of the view peaks, the only mountain that where dogs are not allowed is Monadnock, just okay. per state park regulations, but anywhere else.
And on leash or off leash?
Again, it depends on the dog. It depends on the dog. If they're very well behaved and trained, then they probably don't need to be on a leash. But I've encountered some dogs where they've been aggressive.
Yeah, it's disturbing to be sort of in your hiking zone and yeah. not enjoying nature, and then a big dog comes and jumps on you.
And I think it depends on the terrain too. If you're on a peak where there's a lot of precipitous ledges, cliffs, that sort of thing, it's you want to leash the dog just for safety.
Go ahead, Allison. You hike with your dog, right?
Yes. So my dog, her name is Ruckus. So her demeanor, she loves people, and I know not everyone loves dogs. So I was just talking to someone when I was on Sugarloaf. They were impressed that I was carrying an 18-month-old with the dog, and in order to do that, her pace is a little different than mine. So if I'm on a trail that has lots of boulders and gaps and rocks that I'm going over, it doesn't work that well having her on a leash the whole time. So I have a leash in my hand the whole time. She has a harness. We always keep an eye out when there's people coming up. She's really good at recall. So doing a lot of training with your dog, both physically and I guess mentally with an understanding of your dog. So making sure they know to come when you call them, having them sit. I have her sit on the side of the trail and have another dog go by if they might have some issues, with other dogs. And, making sure if people don't like dogs that she's not all over them. And she's a shepherd mix, so she's a larger dog. So it's not so cute, if she were to jump up. So we really worked on, her not jumping up, her listening mostly.
So if you are going to hike with your dog, make sure that the dog obeys the commands so that he or she doesn't disturb other
people. Exactly. And, just knowing if your dog is okay on ledges. My dog she would never go over a ledge. I did when I was up on Bond Cliff with her. I had her on a leash and she was, she didn't want to go too far, too close to the edge. But some dogs, you'll have a very large ledge and they would just walk off of it. So it's important to really know your dog and just be aware of your surroundings and knowing, when it's okay to have them off the leash for a little bit, when to put them back on the leash. Just being aware is really important.
Brendan, you've had the New Hampshire Family Hikes website up for a while, as you said. Mm-hmm. Any comments that you get on that website from people hiking with dogs or people who don't want other people hiking with dogs?
Not to me personally, but yeah, I know it can,
it's an issue.
It is a very hot topic. Mm-hmm. But I can see what you're talking about here. I have actually definitely had quite a few experiences with dogs aggressively coming up to me. But and that does kind of ruin the hiking mood. But there's definitely a lot of things to consider when you take your dog out onto the hiking trail. Like, for instance, like we were talking about, hazardous conditions, slippery rocks that they could hurt themselves on. I mean, there's wildlife that could be potentially dangerous. There are people, other hikers that could be afraid of dogs or that could frighten your dogs. And I think most importantly, there's other dogs that could potentially be an issue to your dog. So yeah, it's definitely important to make sure that your dog is by your side and under control at all times, just for their safety.
All right, let's go back to our listeners. Tom, thank you very much. Kathleen from Peterborough commented on the difference in people who rush to the top and turn around and go down versus those who like to hang out at the top and meet other people. Kathleen, thank you for jumping in. Richard in Chester says, great topic and book idea. I'll be sure to get it. He says, my absolute favorite in the lesser known peak category is the Welch Dickey Loop on the way to Waterville Valley. At least half the distance is open ledge with views in every direction. I'd suggest, Richard says, going counterclockwise, although you can alternate directions for a different perspective. Sadly, he says, we are losing our views at many New Hampshire peaks as the summits are being reforested and recovering from the devastating forest fires of 100 years ago. Richard, thank you very much. And I'm glad he wrote for a couple reasons. But Ken, you have some of the history of these hikes in your book. Not every hike has an interesting history behind it. But as Richard says, more than one does have a really nice bald top because of a forest fire. So what was going on in New Hampshire 100, 150 years ago, where so many of these peaks were, shorn of trees, basically,
by fires?
Yeah,
it's very common. I mean, peaks like Monadnock, the Bald Faces, they've just been burned over by fire, either by issues around logging or just from storms. Bald Faces has had a couple fires over the years.
What about fire towers? There's a cool history in 52 with a view about fire towers and how they got started and what purpose they served and then how a lot of them have gone away now.
Yeah, New Hampshire has a rich history of fire towers. They're spread out all over the state. This is even a separate fire tower hiking list with 90-something peaks on it, I think.
Oh, 90, that many?
Yeah, I think it's almost 100 maybe at this point. But I think there's about 15 or 16 active towers throughout the state. They were just, this was in the 20s and the 30s, I believe, when this program was first started, and these towers were just erected just to keep an eye on fires. And some of it was also connected to how much logging was done at the time, because the logging presented such a risk. So these towers were constructed to kind of keep watch over some of these areas.
You have a couple hikes, Brendan, on your website that focus on fire towers as a reward. It's fun for kids especially, like, oh, look at this cool structure in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting to hike up to the top of a remote mountain and see that structure there. And yeah, it definitely could be exciting for kids. Funny, we were just talking about that list of 100 fire towers. It is 100 now. I have actually visited all of those personally.
Wow.
it's a great experience. There's a lot of history. I actually wrote an article on my website about the history of fire towers, so you can go check that out. But even for the peaks where there once was a fire tower and there is no longer, what we were talking about earlier about that unique reward. You get to go up there and you search around for the remnants of the fire tower, like these wires and anchor bolts and most commonly that you see the four cement footings just standing there, and you know there was a fire tower there. So yeah.
I remember hiking with our kids, and we would often try to hike to a fire tower because it was a cool attraction. And I had one kid who refused to go up and the other who couldn't wait. So, you know, everybody approaches these differently. Since, Brendan, you mentioned your website, I want to let everybody know again that on nhpr.org/exchange, we've got links to Brendan and Allison and Ken's website. So you can check them out there for more information about hiking this weekend. Again, our phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And John's calling in from Goffstown. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I just kind of wanted to comment on the discussion about dogs and hiking.
Sure.
I have a dog who is not particularly friendly with other dogs and occasionally unfriendly with people. So I've worked out a rig where I can use a long flexi, and he pretty much gets his freedom, but I can reel him in when I need to. And it was really useful a little bit ago when I was hiking on the North Unkanunuk, and my dog decided to tree a small bear. And so I was able to pull him back in and control him and then walk back the way I came, and averting a pretty bad situation that could have come if I hadn't been able to bring him back. So I just wanted to point that out, that there are dogs out there who don't get along with other dogs. And unless you've got real solid control over your dog, That could be a bad situation.
So you hike with your dog on a leash, John. A long leash, it sounds like, but a leash nonetheless.
Well, I have it's a flexi with one of the flat nylon leads, and it's very long. It's like 8 meters, so it's about 24 feet, 25 feet. And I attach that to the waist belt of my pack.
I see.
So he can go in and out happily on his own. But if I need to, I can shorten that up to control him.
Okay. Thank you for calling, John. And here's a comment from Laura on Facebook that I want to share with all of you. She says, I think sometimes we worry less about safety on these smaller, shorter hikes. Last winter, I was on a short, flat family walk at our local nature preserve. During a bitter cold snap, our three-year-old lost her footing, stumbled down a creek bank, and found herself up to her neck in freezing water. Wow. Laura says, I'd never needed it before, but at that moment, I was so happy we had an emergency blanket in our day pack. Just a reminder to hike prepared, even when it seems like overkill, especially when hiking with kids. Laura, I am so glad that you wrote in. Thank you so much. And I'd love to hear from everybody on this. Maybe you first, Allison. Even on those short little hikes where you think I'm just going out for an hour, you need to bring some measure of preparation.
Absolutely. So I do a lot of preparation, both research-wise, gear-wise. I am a little obsessive about gear. You know, I just love, before I had my son, I was an ultralight hiker, so I was carrying everything I needed, but for very little weight. Now, you know, every single hike, it's like a pound is added to my backpack with how much my son gains, you know, every time it seems. But just having all the necessary gear, you can look at AMC has some great resources. There's some guiding companies like Redline Guiding that is great, and they have a blog with resources. I have lots of gear lists, you know, what I pack for different situations. So a day hike, backpacking trips I've done, bushwhacking, I have a specific list, you know, for that, for what you need. Looking at the 10 essentials, there's a little beyond 10. So having your first aid gear, having the knowledge of how to use it. So I've taken wilderness first aid. That's a big part of the preparation, is knowing what to do in a situation if you or someone in your party gets hurt and an ambulance isn't coming in 5 minutes.
Right.
You know, you could be stuck out there for, you know, even a couple of days. So being prepared is important. You know, looking at the weather, multiple weather resources online, different websites to see what the terrain is. Not really, you don't want to underestimate, and this might be something we might be getting to, but one of the things with the 52 with the view list is they're all under 4,000 feet. So people assume that they're going to be easier. However, I like to look at, especially hiking with kids, or if you're hiking with a dog that's newer to the trail, or a friend who, you know, doesn't really hike a whole lot, you want to look at the distance, so the mileage, and the elevation gain.
Sure, because shorter doesn't necessarily mean easy.
Yeah, so if you're hiking, let's say, 2 miles from the trailhead to the summit, and you're hiking, let's say, you know, 1,000 feet of elevation gain, that's a lot in 2 miles. Just, it's, you know, pretty much straight up, versus if that were a 5 mile hike to the summit, you'll have a lot more flat sections.
That's
so just being prepared with the terrain is
so
important.
So don't look at that long mileage and go, oh, that's too long. It might mean it's also an easier, more enjoyable ascent.
Exactly.
So, all right. We will talk a lot more after a short break. Laura, thank you for that Facebook comment. You can also post pictures of some of your favorite hikes on Facebook, the way some folks are doing. And you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, catch up on all the Granite State news you might have missed. It's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. That's Friday on The Exchange. This hour, we celebrate the fall hiking season with 52 with a View. That's a list and now a new book that includes lots of great lesser-known hikes around the state. Send us an email with your favorites, exchange@nhpr.org, or your comments or questions about what you see when you go out hiking. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org or call 1-800-892-6477. And Ken and Allison and Brendan, I'd like to go right back to our listeners. Carl is calling in from Holderness. Hi, Carl. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd just like to comment on saying that you're neither too young or too old to hike. When I hiked the Appalachian Trail when I was 62, and somewhere down in Tennessee, I met a pastor, a gentleman, and he called me back saying, "Hey, young man, where are you going?" So we talked a little bit. It turned out to be he was 76 or 78.
Wow.
When I thought I was the oldest. So when I'm the youngest end of it, we had four daughters, and we started hiking when the youngest one was four. And we finished the 4,000th when she was eight. And the reason it took us so long is with children, you got to be careful. We hiked the first, let's say, 10, 15 mountains only when the weather was really nice and so on. So kids get easily, you know, just distracted and so on. And then we always, when we saw them, we watched them and so on. When they got a little bit nervous and nasty, I tried to divert their thinking and say, "Hey, what do you want when we go? What kind of ice cream do you like when we go and drive home?" And mention, you know, this sort of thing. And the weather is very important when you're young. And then later on, they were allowed to bring their friends along and so on and so forth.
It sounds like you were really successful, Carl, at, you know, providing the incentives. It isn't just, we're going to start, we're going to hike nonstop, we're going to go to the top, we're going to take a picture, we're going to come back down. All the sort of rewards and just making a little bit more fun. So thank you very much for calling. I also love his story, Ken, that he was doing the Appalachian Trail at 63, I think he said.
And he's 90 now?
Yeah, and he was not the oldest person out there, so...
That's great.
Thank you for calling in, Carl. Good to hear from you. And Greg in West Ossipee says, curious if your guests have highlighted the hikes in the Ossipee Mountains, such as Bale Mountain. The Ossipee Mountains are an often overlooked range with lots of variety. Greg, I'm really glad you wrote, because I think one of the ranges that you highlight in 52 with a View, Ken, is the Sandwich Range. Which is also lesser known.
Yeah, and just to go back to the Ossipees for a second, two of the 52 of the View hikes are Mount Shaw and Mount Roberts. So those are in the Ossipee Range. And there's tons in the Sandwich Range. There's a lot of options there. Like Chicora is probably the premier hike in the Sandwich Range.
Yeah, and Chicora will be crowded this weekend. But two of those others that you mentioned, maybe not so much.
Yeah. And to answer his question about Bale, and kind of going off topic a little bit here, but... I'm also working on the AMC Southern New Hampshire Trail Guide, and we're going to be putting Bale Mountain in that guide.
Okay.
So that'll come out next year.
Did you want to jump in, Brendan?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention about the Ossipee Mountains. There's an additional short little challenge in the Ossipee Mountains called the Ossipee 10. Mm-hmm. It's like 10 of the nicest views in the Ossipee Mountains. So it's kind of like a mini version of the 52 with a View for that specific area. And there's a lot of really fabulous, really obscure destinations there that are worth a visit.
Cool. So say that again, the Ossipee 10.
The Ossipee 10.
Okay.
It's not an official list. There's no patch for it, but... It's out there. It's pretty well known, and it's definitely worth a look.
Cool. So, you know, the 4,000-footer club, again, very well known, but now we've got the Ossipee 10, the Fire Tower 100, mm-hmm. or whatever, and 52 with a View, and so on and so forth. So, great. Greg, thank you for writing. Dave emails to ask, could you discuss more about Leave No Trace guidelines, including dogs, and also about hike-safe principles to protect forests and trails? Dave says recreation is such a huge pursuit in New Hampshire, but are we seeing increasing signs that not everyone is on the same page in terms of collective impacts? Dave, thank you so much. And Allison, what have you noticed? You know, it's great that more and more people are getting out. That's wonderful. But there are impacts. Dave's right.
Absolutely. And I think resources like the 52 with the View book, having different trails more accessible, is really important. Recently, there's been a lot of controversy over the Franconia Ridge and people parking on the highway, which I don't know how that was ever thought to be a good idea. But the amount of impact of all of those people, and this weekend will be no different, where there's going to be so many people hiking up and down the Franconia Ridge. And having more options that before, I think a lot of people didn't know about some of these peaks. And I think the incentive of having a list to follow is big for some people. So having that spreads the impact a lot more. I actually helped AMC with a four season. It's a 4,000 footer list, but it's in, you hike each of them in each season. And part of it is you have to do 48 hours of trail work. So that's giving back. You know, if you're hiking these trails, you know, every couple of weekends or multiple times a week, like some people do, it's important to help restore some of the trails. Leave No Trace, they have a great website, some great resources where you can learn about all the different principles. A couple of the biggest ones in my book is leaving it exactly as it is, or even better. If you see, you know, micro trash, which is the little pieces of wrappers, just tossing them in your backpack. If you have a dog, making sure you're bringing dog bags and taking the dog bags with you and not leaving them on the trail is important. And social media is huge. So not putting out there things that are not appropriate, you know, not camping right next to a beautiful lake is huge. There's a lot of pictures of people doing things that other people are interested in doing that isn't good for the trail. So setting the example is really important.
Okay. And he also writes, Ken, about hike safe principles that people should, you know, follow to stay safe so that search and rescue doesn't have to launch a major operation. Do you just want to throw a couple more in there about, you know, hiking smart? Allison talked earlier about some of these principles, bringing enough clothing and food and so forth. But go ahead.
The number one thing I think people should be on top of is the weather. I mean, just the weather in New Hampshire, and especially the whites, just changes. I mean, it can change in minutes. I'm a compulsive weather watcher, so I'll just watch the forecast, you know, right up until the hike time.
Still, the weather at the top can be completely different from the weather at the bottom.
Yeah, a lot of people get misguided because they think, you know, down in the valley it's 75 degrees, but, you know, on the summit it could be 35.
So bring lots of clothes.
Yeah. I mean, and don't do something that you're not prepared to do. I mean, a hike you're not prepared to do. And that's kind of a complicated question to answer, because that's not something you learn until you have more experience.
And sometimes you learn by mistakes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we've all made mistakes.
Thank you for that note, Dave. And let's go to Jeremiah, because he's calling in from Huntsville, Alabama, which is great. So, Jeremiah, welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a question for the group. As someone that is out of state and may be visiting the area, is there any recommendations as far as what's the best hike to do as someone that doesn't live in the area?
And would you be coming this holiday weekend, Jeremiah? Because things are going to be pretty busy this weekend. So you coming up in a couple days?
Not anytime soon, but I occasionally visit the area due to family living there.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for calling. And wow, I'm sure everybody has their favorites. So go ahead, Ken.
I find the best questions are hard to answer because they're kind of subjective, but
it's definitely subjective.
Yeah,
hike,
I mean, as far as the 50 do with the View hikes, the Bald Faces are probably the ultimate, probably the number one hike, because you're above tree line for about 4 miles of open ledge walking. It's got steep, rugged terrain. It's this gorgeous panoramic views. I mean, you can't beat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of the ones more well-known among those Bald Faces?
Well, it's North and South Bald Faces. So those actual names.
Okay,
name
those
the
are the
mountains.
Actual names. Yeah. I thought that was a category of mountains.
Because
there are a lot of mountains that could be described as Bald Faces.
Yeah,
that's the beauty
New
of
New Hampshire has a lot of bald in mountain names. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. What would you pick, Allison?
Yeah, to add to that, I love the Bald Faces. Welch and Dickey. Dickey is on the 52 with the View list, and that's a fantastic loop. A similar one that's not on the 52 with the View list is Morgan and Percival. There's ladders and caves and all of that fun stuff. So that's a really fun hike and beautiful views at the summit. I actually, a lot of friends and I, we joke about this one because a friend graduated college and I brought a cake and we had cake on one of the ladders. And it was just a funny, you know, if you can bring something, you know, fun on the trail, that's even better. Roberts is an easier one with a great view. And even easier is Mount Pemigewasset, also known as Indian Head, and it's right off 93, so it's an easy one to get to as well.
How about you, Brendan?
Well, those are some great suggestions. It's funny we were talking about the Bald Faces. I'd have to say that would be my number one pick for the 52 with a View. I mean, that one really is fantastic because it's a loop hike, and you have so much open ledge walking. For something else, I'd say if I was to take, say, a visiting relative who had never been to New Hampshire before but was interested in hiking, I'd probably go to Mount Garfield, one of the 4,000 footers, because it's a very long yet gradual walk, and there is just a magnificent reward. It's one of my favorite hikes of all time.
All right. Well, there you go, Jeremiah. And I'll direct you, Jeremiah, and everybody else listening, again, to the Exchange website where we've got links to all our guests' information and advice. Our website is nhpr.org/exchange. A couple more comments from our listeners. Brian emails, a great view can be found on the top of South Moat Mountain. Thank you, Brian. Carol emails to say, last weekend our family, all adults, hiked Mount Kearsarge, a beautiful day, and we enjoyed the 360-degree view. Would you mention the very important need to carry water for your dog? Also, would you guests care to comment on the topographic maps that are available to hikers to determine the elevation changes? Anybody want to comment on the topographic maps, elevation changes? I appreciate the suggestion about water for your dog. And we were on a hike once where we had maybe enough water, but then some small child spilled half the water. So that was a whole nother thing. Bring lots of water. Do you want to comment on the maps?
Yeah, regarding the topo maps, I mean, I'm not sure how many people actually use them day to day. I mean, I use them all the time because I'm usually gathering data on trails, but they're definitely helpful to have because you can see what kind of terrain is ahead of you.
Okay. Did you want to jump in, Brendan?
Sure. I'd say the best topographic maps for hiking in the White Mountains are definitely the AMC series, but you can also use the USGS quads. Those are very helpful. They don't always show the accurate placement of trails, but for topographic maps, those are the standard. So you should definitely
Mountain Club.
Yeah. Yeah. You should definitely always carry a map so you're aware of the terrain and which direction to leave in an emergency if you, say, lose the trail.
And USGS is U.S. Geological Survey.
Correct.
Do you buy these maps from those sources? Do you buy them at, you know, stores? Where do you get these? Buy them online?
You can buy them directly from the Geological Survey. You can buy them at stores like the Mountain Wanderer. You can also find them online. There's websites like CalTopo that help you plan out your trip by measuring distances and adding waypoints using a base map of some of these maps.
One thing I want to suggest is you have these guidebooks, which is key, and a lot of information. It's important for you to know the basics and to do your own research. However, you know, I know, Ken, you're an admin for the 52 with the View Facebook group. I'm personally part of one of my favorites is the New Hampshire Women's Hiking Group. And a lot of these groups, you can ask a little bit more advanced questions of, you know, I'm looking to hike in this area. What specific map should I go out and get? And people can give you suggestions on that. And questions that are maybe more experience based. It's great to get information on that as well. So it's a good mix right now. You know, when I started Trail to Summit, it was in 2012. There was virtually no blogs and resources, and I was on hiking forums, which somehow still exist even with Facebook, and getting the information is a lot easier now. So, you know, those maps, you want to make sure you're getting the correct ones for the area you're hiking in.
Jen sent us an email. Some of my favorites, 52 with a view hikes, are Black Mountain in Benton, Mount Cube, Hedgehog Mountain, Jen says, and Mount Martha. She says these are perfect half-day hikes and beautiful in winter. Thank you, Jen, for that email. A couple other people have sent in their favorites. And Valerie from Concord says, the Center for Health Promotion wants us to know that Concord has over 30 trails totaling close to 80 miles.
Yep.
Great hikes, long and short, all levels. The Capital Area Wellness Coalition created the Concord Trail Passport. That's another list that you can log and check off to motivate yourself, where folks can log their hikes and send it in for a rewards discount to local Concord vendors. So we'll have a link on our website towards that as well. You all have mentioned your websites, Facebook, social media. And I wonder, Ken, how do you use social media to spread the word about these hikes?
I mean, the 52 with a View hiker group was started 2013 or so. It's actually started by another person. I was kind of co-admin, and then that person left, and I've been running it ever since. And that's been the biggest, it's just kind of run by itself. I mean, it's really taken off, and especially over the last couple of years since these hikes have gotten more popular and more people are finding them, I've just seen the usage go right up.
It's How about you, Allison? It's
been very popular.
Yeah, the impact of social media in getting people out.
Absolutely. I think there is a huge increase of the people out there, which is good and bad. You know, you have people that are more active. It's healthier and all of that is great. You know, you do have some of the impact. So making sure, like I said before, you are showcasing, you know, that you're leaving no trace, that you're doing all the things that you need to do. You know, sometimes not putting the location where you're at, if it's a more fragile area, that's really important. But just showing your love of being out there motivates others to get out there as well and do something different. And I've loved really helping people start their journeys on, you know, different things that they want to do, you know, weight loss or, you know, battling mental illness or different difficulties where hiking has really helped them both mentally and physically.
Okay. All of you, very quickly, where are you going this weekend? What's the hike? Have you picked it yet, Brendan?
I haven't picked where I'm going
okay.
yet. I like to wait until the last minute and decide based on the weather.
Sure.
So my birthday is always Columbus Day weekend, and I actually avoid going north as much as possible and going somewhere local and where no one will see me. So I'll probably be in the Epsom Town Forest.
Okay. We're going to close it out there. I hope you have great hikes this weekend, wherever you end up. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.